Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon, as we are every single Monday morning for you, making sure there's rugby in your feed. And as we have been doing for over 10 years, the OGs of rugby podcasting, and never forget it. We were there first, and we're still here, and we're there for you every single Monday. And if you appreciate that fact, hit subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and go and get more content at patreon.com/eggchasers and help us keep the lights on. The lights on in the rugby dungeon, illuminating JB's bare OnlyFans ready feet. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, Tim. How are you?
I'm very well. And Phil with a throwback Lions tracksuit top. Like that?
Old Lions. It's got a bit of paint on it.
What year would that be? That'd be the...
I want to say...
09?
No, it's not. It's definitely not that old. It's either 13 or 17. It might be 13.
Do you know what the Lions announced this week?
Did they announce their official champagne partner?
It was a new partner. It's a partner that you did not know that they needed, but they so needed it.
Oh, yeah, they're there.
Do you know?
Yeah, I know. I think I do know.
I do know, actually, yes.
They've got an official mental health partner. Because I often thought when I was watching the Lions, what this needs is more mental health awareness. I need to be reminded I'm mental when I'm watching the Lions. What a waste of time. You will not waste this.
JV's off already.
You're just jealous you're not getting a free trip to
Australia. I mean, there is
Australia.
That.
Phil, it's not. Well, it's not free. It's costing some people, people money.
And donate to the mental health charity so we can go to the Lions tour, or so the Lions can pay for us to go to the Lions tour. Someone's going to pay for them to go to the Lions tour, but it's okay because we're raising awareness. Like the mental health industrial complex, which is basically what it is, to make very healthy men.
You didn't think about it.
I am. People think that I'm callous, and I am to a degree. But if I was really callous, I'd get on this bandwagon because it'd make me a fortune. Maybe absolute fortune flogging hoodies and appropriating men's ill health. But, you know, I wasn't, so it is what it is.
On that, it's probably it's a very loose tangent to take. But one thing I did want to mention on the flip side that I thought was amazing this week, two words, Courtney Laws. What a man.
Yeah.
What a man.
Yeah. His media tour has been somewhat of a success, if that's what we call it.
Well, I don't know about you. Is this me, and I'm not trying to take any credit because I'm delighted at what Courtney Laws is saying, but there are some incredible echoes to the specific phrases Courtney's saying and what we have been saying on this podcast for years. And I know Courtney's a friend of the pod, and I'm pretty sure he listens.
Well, I hate to disappoint you. I can confirm he does not listen to us or any rugby content, unfortunately.
He knows who I am. Every time I go to Northampton, he comes over.
He knows who we are, but I would suggest he doesn't follow any rugby content because that's just not what he does. I mean, you wouldn't have to listen to us to come to these conclusions because they're very common sense to most people.
It's just that I had multiple people say, Courtney listens to the podcast.
Yeah, I've had lots of people saying, are you pleased with that?
So I do not mind how it happens, but hearing an elite player say, rugby, your solution to get out of the trouble you're in is stop apologising and embrace what you are.
100%.
I love it.
It's not difficult, though. Is it?
Embrace the physicality.
Well, let me tell you a quick story, right? I would sort of link this to what I did today. So, I also saw a professional rugby player's sister today.
Ooh, oh, did right? you?
I did.
Hold on, can we guess the professional rugby player?
Yeah, so, go for it.
In what context did you see this?
She was playing netball.
Okay.
Ah. So was this watching your sister play netball?
No, it was not. So, one of the girls in my box, CrossFit box, so already got a CrossFit reference in there, plays for Trafford Netball. So okay. Trafford are one league below the Super League. So you've got Super League, so this is like level two netball. And the first thing you're struck by is, my word, this is high quality. Like, I'm not joking. It is awesome. And I couldn't believe it. So we're looking at, you know, imagine you go to like a level eight rugby club, right? They've probably got their own clubhouse. They've probably got two teams, one on their pitch, one on someone else's pitch. And there is a good chance, like we were playing level seven yesterday, I played yesterday.
I was at Wilmslow Rugby Club watching their first team game at level seven.
And how many people were there? 100?
100?
200?
Yeah, about 100 people, excluding the players. And it cost us bloody 18 quid to get in, me and my family.
18 quid, right? So on a Sunday, you can go to Ultram Girls Grammar, Sixth Form Centre, for free. At least I didn't pay, so maybe I owe some money. You can watch some of the most incredible sport. It is honestly brilliant. It is brilliant. So I watched Trafford. I was going to say Trafford Metrovics, not Trafford Metrovics.
Steve Diamond's old club.
No. Trafford playing Premier Romans. Now, here's a clue. Premier Romans.
Chester.
No, that's what I thought.
Yeah, I was going to guess Chester. Yeah.
not York either. Bristol, weirdly.
Okay. So I guess Roman Bath, Bristol.
Yeah, I don't really get that. Yeah. Well, Bath have got their own team in that league. So I don't know why they're the Romans, but they are. Anyway, Trafford beat them by about, I think, 14 points in the end. They absolutely smashed them in the third quarter. So anyway, there was a substitute for the Bristol team. Have a guess whose sister it was.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm guessing it's going to be tall, so I'm thinking second row, back row.
Not tall.
Mm. Oh, okay. So a centre.
Powerful.
Okay. So for the Bristol...
Is it a Bristol player?
It's going to be a Bristol and born and bred rugby player.
Yeah. Who's powerful and not that tall.
And whose name you'd instantly recognise.
It's not Genge, is it?
It is exactly Genge.
Oh, wow.
So I'm pretty... But the thing which has really confused me about all this, right, is that she was playing in someone else's kit. Because it did not say Genge on the back. I would know... If I saw someone from Bristol with Genge on their back, and she looks the spitting image of him too. So I don't know what's going on, but her name on her shirt was not Genge, but it is on the team sheet.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I'm sure she was in someone else. Maybe she's not registered and this is a scandal. Maybe I've unearthed a scandal. Honestly, though, boys, you want to see them play. Like, the standard of... The quality is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Women's sport is more enjoyable than men's sport, right? I'm going to say this. Now, when I say women's sport, I mean sport which is designed for women.
Which sports are designed for women other than netball?
Well, this is it. So netball isn't tripping over itself to get male players in, right? It's not tripping over itself to have a diverse commentary panel. It's not doing anything. It's just being netball, and it's actually quite refreshing. I just can't understand, right, why there's such an imperative to have women playing all these other sports.
Oh, if they want to play. We've gone through a load of social issues. Yeah. We haven't talked about any rugby.
Yeah, but there's no imperative for men to play netball, which is a far superior sport to, say, touch rugby. Anyway, that would be...
Yeah, netball's ace. Yeah. I love joining in with it as well, but it makes netball's cool.
Oh, it's quality.
I love it.
So there we go. Hang on. Ellis Genge's rugby.
Yeah, I like that.
There you go.
I love that. That was the bit that I was into.
I'm sure there is so many famous rugby players' sisters playing... Because...
Isn't the Currys?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And obviously, high level. Tracy Neville was coach of England.
In the Commonwealth Games,
Yeah. There we go. That's the end of the netball set.
No, love it.
No more netball now.
That's cool.
Right. Shall we get into some rugby straight away?
Yeah. I tell you what, let's quickly discuss the updated England squad.
I didn't know it was updated.
Yes, it has been updated. And there are outs and there are ins. The outs are Alex Mitchell.
Who's injured.
Okay.
And the in for him is Harry Randall. As Eddie Stevens from Rugby Ranter Banter, another great podcast to check out. Little Harry Randall. Running with his candle.
Yep.
So go and check that podcast out.
I like that.
So little Harry Randall is in. And the other out, well, the other in actually, is Ollie Lawrence, who's been upgraded from rehab to now in the squad and available, which is great. The out, I would have assumed it would be Max Ojomo going out.
Yeah.
But Will Muir is out.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Mm.
That is interesting.
Slightly disappointed.
And yeah, very disappointing. So Max Ojomo is staying in, is he?
Yeah, well, what this makes me think, so this is one thing. Obviously, we can talk about Ollie Lawrence and the midfield partnership in a second. That's the biggest outcome and who starts nine. Does Ben Spencer leapfrog Danny Kerr into the starting spot? In fact, let's touch on both of those first and I'll hold the other thought I've got. Nine and centres.
Nine, okay. So does Danny Kerr leapfrog?
Does Danny Kerr go off the bench to start or does Ben Spencer become the starting player instead of Alex Mitchell?
I feel Ben Spencer.
Or Harry Randall.
Yeah, because if we reverse this in the summer when Van Portfleet got injured, mm-hmm. Mitchell came from out of the squad
100%
to start in the World Cup. Now, I think probably most like Van Portfleet and Mitchell is Ben Spencer. Yep. So I suspect he would jump up.
I think you're right.
I feel the same way because I just don't see Ben Spencer being able to change a game like Danny Kerr. So rather than it be about the starter, I think it's about the importance of the impact from the bench.
I think you might be right.
And Randall is the kind of player who offers a big impact as well. So it could be Spencer up and actually Randall comes in, which would be a weird shift around.
But then again, Alex Mitchell was not in Steve Borthwick's World Cup squad and ended up starting.
Yes.
And the thing about Alex Mitchell, who is now, we all agree, the England number one, seems to be, at least.
Yeah, until Van Portfleet gets back fit.
Now, this might be a case of I just don't know what I'm talking about, and it's very possible, because there's some occasions where you look at a player and you have a impression of him, and maybe the impression is not the correct one. But I just don't see him as a natural replacement for Van Portfleet. He's not what I would consider like not a natural kicker. He can kick the ball, but that's not his game. So they've gone from Van Portfleet, who's a great kicker, probably the best kicking nine in the league, I would say, to a guy who doesn't do that. So it's not like England replacing like for like. I think whoever they replace Mitchell with, they'll probably play him to his strengths rather than try and play him as a replacement for Van Portfleet or indeed Mitchell.
Yeah, I hope that's true. So I can see, and I actually did a little video a bit earlier on, which is on the Egg Chasers Rugby YouTube channel, where I kind of assumed that Danny Kerr would get elevated. But then since, I've been thinking, oh, no, I think Ben Spencer will jump into the nine jersey.
Yeah, I mean, having Danny Kerr on the bench, right, it's not just he's an impact player, but having that guy with that experience watching the game for 60 minutes is pretty powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's when you're going to get the most out of him. You let Danny Kerr watch your position for 60 minutes and then you let him play for, the remaining time, you're in business.
I think I agree with you. And centre, you would think, as long as he's fit and well, Ollie Lawrence starts, but in what composition? Because I could see it being Dingwall Lawrence, I could see it being Lawrence Slade, I could see it being Tuilagi Lawrence.
I think the most likely is Lawrence Slade, and they will line up at 12 and 13, depending on the scenario.
Yeah, I don't like this. I think Lawrence Dingwall. I think England have got to just decide that Lawrence is the best 13. And that is the end all of it. Then you've got to select the best 12, and that probably is Dingwall at the moment.
Because he's the only one who actually properly plays 12.
And stop trying just to get the most talent on the field. I know it can work. It has worked for a lot of teams. It hasn't worked for England. And Ollie Lawrence is by far the most devastating 13. So just let him play.
And Slade would be a good number 23 shirt.
Yes, he would. Yeah, there's no two ways about that. You can cover everything, can't you?
Yeah, I'm torn because that principle of get the best player in their position, the position that they play most frequently in, I ordinarily strongly stand by that approach. Particularly for England, because I think England produce fewer utility players because players are probably pigeonholed earlier on in their careers. So with what England have to work with, I think that's the best approach. However, in this scenario, and I'm a big Dingwall fan, but I'm just not sure he's fully up to international rugby. I've not seen it from him yet. So even though I like the principle of get the best players who play in those positions, and that would be Dingwall, he is the best player in the squad who regularly plays 12, I'm not sure he is as high-end as either Lawrence or Slade.
I totally agree with you.
He's absolutely not. But I think experimenting with Manu at 12, Lawrence at 12, Slade at 12, just you've got to make a decision now. Only one player can play 13, and Lawrence is the king, so he plays.
Yeah, but Slade is playing so well at the moment.
He is playing well.
And there is a little bit of me that thinks, because both Slade and Lawrence, they do defensively, offensively, switch between. There's a bit more fluidity between how they both play. Sometimes they play more like a 12, sometimes they play more like a 13, for different reasons as well. For Lawrence, for his heavy traffic carrying and his crash ball, and Slade for his distributing and kicking. That just feels like the best option.
I do think Slade requires a bit more space to be effective. And when there is no space, that's when you want Lawrence to break things open.
Mm.
That would be my thought. Slade's obviously got the better skill set, but Lawrence is the better player for international.
Yeah, he's such a good runner.
Mm.
Low centre of gravity, powerful, fast as well. So yeah, I think the most likely scenario is Lawrence and Slade.
So do I.
Did I see Manu's back in the team?
Yeah, he's in the squad.
Why?
Well, he started a World Cup semi-final and looked quite good a little while ago. So I'm not saying that he would be my first choice, but I'm more than happy to have him in the squad as long as he is not first choice. It's putting all your eggs in the Manu basket has been the problem for the last 10 years because there hasn't been anyone better or
just don't see the point.
More effective.
I think when you're 32, you shouldn't really be back unless you're Danny Kerr. I mean, he's just not playing well enough for me. He's just not playing well enough and hasn't for about 3-4 years.
And there is this... So I'm all for... pick the team that's going to win you the game tomorrow.
Yeah.
But there is also... There's a trade-off with that because if you just pick... Like, we're in a World Cup cycle, obviously. Be it right or wrong, but we are in a World Cup cycle. The next World Cup is 3.5 years away. At which point Manu will be nearly 36, and with the wear and tear on his body, yeah. I can't see him still be playing in England if he is still playing at all.
No, I agree.
But therefore, if he's not first choice, if he's not the single best player, you are costing someone else younger who will be
now.
For now,
and this is it. I don't see. I think Manu right now is worth his place in the squad because the biggest point is there is nobody that is not in the squad that I would rather was in the squad, whereas I think in a year's time two of the guys that are in the England A squad for this weekend, Ollie Hartley and Massey White
White, that's interesting.
Yeah, well, the two of them are in the England A squad, both former Wasps players, now at Saracens and Sale. Well, I'll tell you what, Wasps' academy was unreal.
Good.
The players that have been scattered, I'm not just talking about the big names like Barbary and the like, but the guys that were in the academy, Emmanuel Faye-Wobosa, they had an unreal team bobbling away under the surface
they've always been quite good at bringing lads through, to be fair, Wasps, but, you know, shame.
Yeah.
Massive shame.
But those two aren't ready now, but in a year's time might be.
Does the Wasps Academy still exist? I think it still does.
I have no idea.
Do Wasps women's team still exist?
Well, I don't know.
I think that they do, actually.
You're our women's sport correspondent, you tell us.
Yeah. Also, oh, the irony. Because I'm sure the Worcester still play.
Well, I think Worcester women do still play.
No, they don't, because...
They're not.
No, they were taken over, and then the guy who took them over... said a few things, didn't he, in a press release, like, no matter how you spin this is not profitable. That's basically what he said.
As for the other point I was going to make then, so I was surprised to see Will Muir go, but I think that says to me, Steve Borthwick has decided that is not a Eddie Jones trademark test match animal.
I think he doesn't know what he's talking about then.
And
simple as that.
And let me add to that the fact that Emmanuel Faye-Wobosa in two test matches has played 2 minutes of rugby.
Yeah.
Why?
He does not trust that guy either.
No.
And it was only the last 2 minutes when England were 8 points up.
He does not trust Faye-Wobosa.
You know, wings, though, are getting so important. I mean, they used to be luxury items that you threw on,
well, exactly,
on the edge of the field. But now, if your wing doesn't hunt down balls, it doesn't catch the ball,
also, and this is what's important for England, this is what's making me think... that you have to have the... And it was actually... I don't know if I'm... No, it was when we were chatting to Paul Gustard.
Yeah.
One of the things I came away thinking, as well as Phil had mentioned previously, that it was the money attached to every player, the rugby IQ was a massive one in Paul Gustard's mind. I won't say what he said about which players, but when he judges them, he's like, oh no, they're physically really good, but actually no, they don't read the game, they don't get the game. And I think with Felix Jones coming in and England's blitz defence, you have to have a great top 2 inches to know exactly when to make that decision, when to hit, when to go soft, when to be soft, when to run in and smash. And I just don't think it's a tough call. Emmanuel Faye-Wobosu, who's hardly played any senior rugby. Will Muir's a great physical specimen. Does he have a great rugby brain? I don't know. Maybe not.
And he might have a great rugby brain in other dimensions, but yeah. Does he have a rugby brain that suits, like, there are certain players, like someone like James Simpson Daniel springs to mind, who Brilliant. Has this incredible rugby brain when it came to the offense. Yeah, instinctive attack. But not the instinctive defence. And there are different aspects to it.
Ollie Smith, allegedly, who turned out to be a Lion, so not a bad player by any stretch, apparently was unable to handle Andy Robinson's defensive calls because he had so many different defences in so many areas of the field. Mm-hmm. So it can happen. Now, there's not enough evidence for me to suggest that that is Will Muir at all, actually. And over to the point that Gustard made, I mean, you do see this all the time. The classic one for me, until very recently, has been Joe Cocker-Singer. Like, when you watched him fill in the Irish, it was obvious he did not get the game. It was obvious. He was just an absolutely massive specimen. Another guy who's improved massively over the last couple of years is like Aaron Reid. When Aaron Reid first started, he just couldn't get... I don't think they don't get the game. I think they don't get the pace of the game. And you see someone who does... I mean, back to Cocker-Singer, he was the big star draw, but actually the winger who was so much more effective than him was Lewington, because he did get the game. He knew exactly what he was doing. So, yeah, you see it all the time.
And with someone like Reid, or particularly Cocker-Singer, Reid would always have been the fastest guy on the pitch, playing all his age grade. Cocker-Singer would have been the biggest and the fastest guy on the pitch all the way through age grade. They didn't have to learn the game as youngsters, because they were too good, if anything, too talented.
And for the same reason that we don't get many utility players, the bosh and the contact is massive, culturally a massive part of English rugby at lower levels, and
it is.
I don't think enough money is spent on coaching at those lower levels, except in public schools where it's amazing.
Yeah, but you know, coaching goes two ways, doesn't it? I mean, yeah, I played a game this weekend, and our coaching's absolutely fine. But if we were really switched on, we would have kicked more, and you would learn how to play in terrible conditions. There again, what does that matter when you're playing the international game, when the pitch is, no matter what the conditions are, going to be perfect, except maybe the Millennium Stadium when it tears up after a concert? But how do you coach that? But generally speaking, you know, we have to coach what is in front of us. I mean, if you could spend all the money in the world on coaching. And this weekend, in fact, I'll give you a better example. This weekend I sent a video from Macclesfield, which is a really cool video of Tommy Taylor chatting about the game following their results. And behind him is a Macclesfield pitch, and it is an absolute bog. Mm-hmm. Now, you could spend any amount of money coaching hands and skills. It'd be pointless. It'd be a waste of money.
Yeah, on those days, but then that's one of the...
When you're in the league.
No, I totally agree. I'm not saying we should be at the expense of...
I mean, it's only one night a week that you get to train. I mean, maybe with kids it's different. You know, that's when you work on the skills and handling. But when it gets to adult rugby, you just want to win. And that, I mean, the most important coaching thing you can do is kick chase. And it's boring, but kick chase wins games.
Which is why, it is one of the things that Borthwick looks for.
Yeah.
Particularly in his wingers.
Mm. Kick chase.
Which is why, actually, I'm a bit surprised that Muir's gone, because I think he's one of the best in the league at kick chase.
So good for England.
But
there's obviously something that I can't see that they're seeing.
Yeah, same.
Well, they're wrong.
We briefly mentioned it, but there is an England A squad as well.
England Saxons.
Did you?
England Saxons, if we're allowed to call them.
That annoys me. That's such a great name.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Such a great name.
Let's be rebels anyway. And call it Saxons. So the Saxons are finally reformed. Did you see what... Ed, why have I gone blank? There was a video up with Conor O'Shea giving an interview.
Yes.
Have you seen the interview?
Talking about Zach Mercer. I've seen a 60-second clip of
Ed Slater. Okay, so the...
Ed Slater posted it, right? And he said, basically, what he's saying is there is not much room for players like me that made it the hard way through the championship. And you listen to it and you think, God, yeah, Ed's absolutely right. That's exactly what Conor O'Shea is doing. And, like, I listened to that interview two or three times, like a 3-minute clip.
Can you give us a précis of what you said? Yes, I can.
So he said lots of words with no real meaning. That's how I describe it.
Well, what was the bit that? So what were the bits that? The gist. What was the gist?
So the gist was they are prioritising lads from the under 20s for the continuity of under 20s into senior.
Right. Oh, for the England A squad.
Yeah. And he's like, it's just about the balance. Like, why? Why is it about the balance?
So, am I right in saying that the thrust of what he was saying was,
if you don't come through the system, you've not got much of a chance.
Don't read the England A squad as these are the next best players in their position and that they will be the next cab off the rank to go, there are better players who are not in the England A squad, who will be closer to the England squad.
In a non-traditional or a very traditional route, depending on which way you look at it.
Yeah.
So I've not seen that section of the interview. I saw the little bit talking about Zach Mercer. But is that a function of the timescales? Because these boys get together this week, they play one game next week, and that's it. Yep. It makes sense to have players who have played together and understand systems where they can just be dropped into a single system.
Well, what O'Shea was waffling, and it was waffle to be fair. I mean, I don't want to be unkind, but the way he was talking about, we have lads from this system and then we want continuity from the under 20s.
Was he addressing Zach Mercer specifically?
It did sound like the end of that question, yeah.
Right, okay.
And then he goes, it's about finding that balance. I'm like, well, why does that balance matter? I've never looked at a team and thought, well, I need the balance between the under-20s and the other players, or, you know, some lads that came through one system and another system. I've never needed that balance. Just give me the best team. It doesn't matter where they've come from. It's a completely stupid metric to be using, in my opinion.
Unless it is purely for the, well, we've got 1 week, so we can't... It's very difficult to teach totally disparate lads.
But aren't
a new
the
system.
Under 20s playing that week?
Yeah, but these guys are not from
the 20s.
Yeah, these guys might have been under 20s 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
I think it's a stretch, only because, like you say, they were playing under 20s 3 years ago, and a lot of water has gone under the bridge since then. They've been with their clubs, and they're getting together for a week. So if you're a professional rugby player, and you didn't go through the under 20s, I don't think an under 20s player's got massive advantage over you, because you've got a week to learn it, and you are a professional. It's fine.
And another element, and this links in with something that's going on in the rugby team I coach, my son's team at the minute. I think rugby union has got an issue with this.
Mm.
It really does have an issue with this. My brother we went to state school, so we didn't go through a traditional route. And had Bath not played a game against Newbury, which was a rarity, so the only time that had ever happened at whatever it was, under 18s level, then Nick would never have been spotted.
Yeah.
And he played against Bath, and they went,
that guy's all right.
Do you want to come along? Do you want to come along and join our academy? That was it. And he would never have been spotted. And the reason I mention it now in relation to my team is, I was having a, I won't name names, but one of the players in the under 16 team that my son plays in went to an Irish exiles trial this week.
Yeah.
He's sort of been identified anyway, the invitation came. But he went through the trial only to find out that the teams for the games that are coming up in a few weeks were selected a couple of weeks ago.
Why? Why would they do that?
Yeah. And
I do know, like, Irish rugby are phenomenal at identifying anyone around the world Irish heritage. So he will now be on a list for the entirety of his rugby career.
Yeah, you think
but don't invite him to training if there's
don't invite him to
training. He's got other things to do.
But there's also, I've seen it, like the public schools, private school system in England is phenomenal at producing rugby players.
It is.
You cannot help but thinking, and it's not just a chip on my shoulder from when I was going to the final Southwest trial and had the stormer of my life, and people were going, if you don't get picked now, you never will. And I didn't get picked. But I see it with the lads now. We've got so many great players, and they all get overlooked, and all of the players are like Sedba.
Yeah, because I think there is a
Kirkham.
Yeah, I think that playing well in front of someone probably holds less weight than a schoolmaster saying he's really good and I see it every day. Because they trust that opinion and they trust them seeing them but the problem is, of course, that there's not an equivalent advocate watching the boys play at Broughton Park or Old Winions or Oldham or Widnes or any of these clubs. And it's a real problem for me. I think the pathway system is... I hate it, actually. I don't like academies. I don't like any of these things. You just have senior rugby for clubs, and that's it. And everyone should play together, because I think they're incredibly damaging. And furthermore, yeah, I get you want good coaching, but why not invest all that academy money, of which there is plenty of it, well, not plenty of it, but there's some of it, back into local clubs. Mm. So if you are in Sale Sharks, and this is one of the most frequently occurring things, and they'll say, oh, we have safeguarding to prevent this, and we're always trying to reintroduce them back into club rugby. The reality is, once you've had a taste of Carrington, or once you've had a taste of Oval Park, or wherever it is that they train, you don't really want to go back, because you're so invested in being that thing, whether it be a Tiger, or a Saint, or a Chief, you don't really want to go back and be a bloody Tock H player, or a Broughton Park player. Loads of lads
100%
because of this.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. And they don't play a level of rugby which is of a decent standard anyway. So as Ed Slater alluded to, the Championship is where, if you're not straight into a Premiership team, that's where you find front five players especially.
Well, if you want to be a professional and you're not in a state school, my advice to you would be go over to New Zealand, play some rugby, just so you can get some good names on your CV so people take you seriously. Because if you show up in, it's like Tock H and, I don't know, Ampt Hill, and, you know, I mean, actually, if you're in Ampt Hill, are you decent? But even if you say Ampt Hill, they're not going to necessarily take you seriously for the academy. So go away and get a load of decent experience with New Zealand teams, and they might take you seriously. Because they always come with a bit of mystique once you go overseas.
Matt Simons.
Yeah, go and play some South African schoolboy rugby.
Yeah, so just to finish that point on the pathway and everything. So that was the experience that some of my lads have had with rugby union, just getting it being the places in the Sale and Lancashire. We've got a few that have gone through, but a load of them, which are very, very good players, are like, oh no, they're not in, and no one, and it's all good. But the second point is a few of them play rugby league as well. Mm. And this weekend they were at England trials for rugby league.
So,
and they all got a really good crack.
I have a story. It's not really a story, but someone told me something about the most successful academy possibly on the planet. Any guess which one it is?
So it's a rugby academy.
It's a rugby academy.
Glenn Hoddle. Oh no, what?
Successful. What's the metric of success?
Producing top-end professional players.
Professional
from a small region.
It'll be somewhere in South Africa.
No, it's not. It's in the UK.
Yorkshire?
Nope.
Llandovery College.
It's so local, right? It's unbelievably local. And I'll get the stats for you next week, because I think you'll find this kind of remarkable. So I don't have the stats to hand, but I know, broadly speaking, I'm kind
Let's
of
go
in
Cornwall.
The right ballpark. Nope.
So Wigan.
Much better, Phil. Much better.
Or St. Helens.
St. Helens.
Correct. The statistics of what St. Helens have done of getting local... I mean, you're talking about a town that makes a bit of glass and some tea, right? And it is... I mean, they're not getting these lads from Liverpool, and they're not getting them from Wigan. It is literally just St. Helens. And the amount of lads that they've got locally and turned them into not only very good club players, but international players, if you think about it, it's unbelievable. Now, there is a trade-off to that. There may be... optimising an organisation for professional rugby doesn't necessarily translate into amateur rugby, but the statistics are absolutely incredible. And that's from, what is the population of St. Helens? Are they renowned for being tall? Or, you know, is it like Georgia? Like, not really. It's St. Helens.
Well, yeah, it's not like Holland or Serbia or somewhere like that.
Yeah. So I will do some digging during the week, and I'll let you know next week, because when I heard it, and it's a few weeks ago now, I thought, God, that's really impressive.
Mm. What else is going on other than Six Nations? Is there anything else bubbling around news wise?
Premiership Cup, did you watch that?
I caught a bit of it while I was watching the Wilmslow. I caught the second half of Gloucester.
No one cares about that game.
Exeter.
What about the game today?
I didn't see the game today.
I saw the game today.
You know who played, yeah?
Ealing and Leicester.
Yeah.
Leicester.
What was the result?
To Ealing as well.
Well, the score isn't really a reflection of the game, I would say.
It's funny because...
Leicester won handily in the end.
Yeah, two scores.
Yeah, to finish 21-28. But Ealing were totally dominant at scrum time. The two teams were fairly evenly matched.
Yeah.
Ealing were totally dominant at scrum time.
Who did Leicester have in their front row? James.
Dan Richardson.
Who will not be getting a new contract, I assume.
Yeah, who they brought from the Championship, I think.
Poor Dan Richardson. I hate saying stuff like that because it's so cruel, but... he had a horrific game. There's no other word for it. So
he was up against Will Goodrich Clark.
Yeah, London Irish last year.
Yeah.
Big boy.
Yeah. Yeah, you might.
And he was in the England squad, the wider England squad previously. And they had Billy Allo as well. Whereas Leicester had Van Vijk, who's an experienced loose head.
Yep.
They started with Theobald Thomas, who scored a try, and then Dan Richardson, who was in all sorts of trouble against Goodrich Clark.
Yeah, there's a reason these props are paid some good money.
So I've always liked Goodrich Clark as well, and he really showed up well. Had Ealing won, he would have been man of the match.
I agree.
He scored a try as well.
What is with picking... Right, we need to just end this, because if he was the best player on the pitch, he's the best player on the pitch. Done.
Yeah, but...
Phil Cocker and Singer got one of the match.
He scored two tries.
Okay.
One of which was the try that won it, basically. So...
Fine. I'll let that one go. But Tommy Rafael, for example.
He
was the best player in the England-Wales game.
You've got to avoid... This happened to Michael Hooper and Joe Launchbury.
Oh, let it happen. They'll deal with it.
The pictures of them being awarded the Man of the Match award when they've just lost. And the glum face.
But that's international, isn't it? Like a semi-final or something. You know, for Ealing, they'd be delighted.
They would be delighted.
But also, like what they need to do... Oh. What's just happened? It's like my headphones have come out.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah, no, it's fine. We're still on.
Waveform looks good.
We have to go... we have to get to a point where the Man of the Match award is good. Not like a can of Tennent's in a glass case, for example.
But that
needs
is
to be
good,
like
a
nice
way.
Watch. And then...
Well, no, Rugby League used to do the Tissot watch.
Yeah.
But it's like the...
Exactly.
Did you see...
Was it a good watch? I don't really remember that. Was it like a £100 watch or £200 watch?
A few hundred pound watch, yeah.
Yeah, it needs to be a couple of thousand pound watch.
Yeah, a couple of thousand pound watch.
Kind of like the watches that Saracens used to give out with contracts, allegedly. Allegedly.
Did you see, this is very appropriate, Jamal Ford Robinson, friend of the pod's tweet this week.
No.
On just this subject.
No.
So he got his first Man of the Match award in European rugby.
And I gave it to him.
A few weeks ago. From now onwards, the Man of the Match will be presented with a Tissot watch in all EPCR, which he obviously missed out on.
Oh, that's outrageous.
In the group stage.
Well, he knows how to win Man of the Matches now, so it's not a problem for him.
Yeah, props win them so rarely. That's the other reason.
Yeah.
I was like, if Will Goodrich Clark was the best player, he should get it anyway.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I'm meeting a former Saracen next week. Going out for lunch with Jackson Ray.
Ooh, oh, excellent, JB. You can say to you.
I've already told him. I told him I didn't have a pair of your boots.
You had a pair of my boots, which you were meant to be displaying that didn't belong to you, and you gave them to someone.
We all know boots belong out in the wild. It's not like the Barry Johns boots. Like they were still serviceable.
Bottom line: do not come back from that meeting without a pair of boots for the dungeon.
If I come back with Jackson Ray's business brogues, is that okay?
Yeah, that'll do. I'll have
them. Done.
So,
suit.
So I found this game interesting because Ealing were totally dominant at scrum time, and Leicester won. And I'm particularly interested, especially wearing an England hat, in teams managing to win with no scrum.
What do they do?
Well, the key message from this would be just intercept two passes and score two intercept tries. Because that was what finished Ealing through two intercepts in the last 10 minutes.
Oh, man.
Matt Scott scored.
Oh, devastated.
Another pass from an intercept, and Thokkenesinger got his second try. So
Ealing must be, they'll be sore.
Gutted, because this is a game they could have won, and probably should have, because they were so dominant at scrum time.
Yeah, yeah. Although, do you know what this game has also convinced me of?
What?
The Championship should not have promotion. And Ealing should not be in the Premiership. Because...
It convinced me the opposite.
Go on, you give me your pitch and then I'll give you mine.
No, I want to hear the case for the prosecution.
Sure. So, can you remember what Ealing were meant to be a few years ago? So they bring in Alex Shaw, who was the oracle of all things like development and young players and scouting. He loved his processes and whatnot. They developed this relationship with Brunel University.
Or St Mary's or whatever.
Whatever it is. Because uni rugby, to be fair, you get a lot of good players there. And they wanted to do it sort of the right way, didn't they? They wanted to demonstrate what you could do with a great academy and great scouting and a GM, and it's all very exciting. It just seems to be a holding pen now for journeyman players. So if this is what the best of the Championship is, I'm not really that interested. It's just a collection of guys who aren't quite good enough to be in the Premiership.
Now, how would you have described Worcester when they were in the Premiership?
Probably exactly the same, to be honest. Right. But, like, they're not here. Good. Right? And I kind of think the same with Ealing. So, if this is what the Championship has to showcase, it's not Championship players. It's not players that they've developed. It's not players from their academy. It's
there's absolutely a context, and you have to think outside of the last few years. Because the context is the RFU have been outrageous in their treatment of the Championship. But, and what you're seeing is a consequence of that.
To me, if Ealing were creating loads of great players, remember, where they are, it's already very well serviced for academy rugby between Saracens and Harlequins and formerly London Irish and all the rest of it. If they were producing loads of great players and they had a few games at Ealing and then they automatically just walked into Premiership teams, I'd say, yeah, this is outrageous, actually. Ealing deserved to be going up because look at what they're doing. But being candid, I could assemble that Ealing team with enough money. Anyone could assemble that Ealing team with enough money.
I understand your point right now, but this is one of the arguments that is often given by people who have a vested interest in there not being promotion relegation. They look at the Championship now and say, see, it's not good enough now, and completely omit the facts that it has been...
No, it's not about not being good enough, Tim. If they got absolutely smashed with a load of homegrown players, I'd be like, they need more exposure.
I know, I watched a lot of Championship rugby when Nick played. Nick stuck before he went to Sale and London Irish. Mm. He was at Plymouth Albion and then Nottingham. When he was at Nottingham, there was... Talk about local homegrown players. Ed Slater, you've already
mentioned him.
Ed Slater, Tim Strether was a local Nottingham lad, went to Saracens. Alex Lewington.
There's loads of them.
My point being, you had, there was a point when the Championship was rich with exactly the type of players you're talking about, and it did have teams that were a representation of the local area and went on and played Premiership rugby. All I'm saying is you cannot make a snap judgment now, take a snapshot now, and say that is how things are, but and that is how things will always be.
I don't think I'm saying that. I'm just saying this team, if this is the argument to come up to the Premiership, I'm not buying it. If they got smashed and they had a Nottingham-style team with loads of local lads and lads that bought it through uni, you'd say, yeah, fair enough. You know, they need the experience.
I'd also say give it time. How long's that academy setup been going?
About 10 years.
No.
I reckon it has been, yeah.
No, we've been going 10 years. We're talking 2 years.
No, definitely not 2 years. Well, I mean, the average age of that Ealing team is bloody old. And also, they've got no restrictions. Do you know, like, all the other academies have
to
share... Are
you sure this isn't cognitive dissonance? You don't want promotion, so you're looking at this Ealing team and finding a reason why this means that you're
no,
right.
This is not an argument for no promotion.
Yeah.
This is an argument why this Ealing team doesn't win that argument. They're two completely separate things.
Okay.
And what they've actually done is they've just spent money on retreads. And I think once you're not good enough to be in the Premiership, you're not in the Premiership.
One of the ways you would do that is if by taking something you said earlier and getting rid of Premiership academies.
100%. Don't get me wrong, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
But when you're the only club with substantial backing lower down, I would have expected to see that. And it just, to me, that's disappointing.
Well, I think it's probably a reflection of the scenario that they're in. As in, that academy would have been set up, let's say, 5 or 6 years ago, I think.
Well, let's find out.
I don't think it was that long.
It was set up pre-COVID.
Yeah.
COVID's 4 years ago now.
Yeah.
So it's more than 4 years ago. And then the landscape has changed during COVID and post-COVID. So the route that they would have had when they set up that academy to do an Exeter no longer exists to them.
Yeah.
So why would they continue to pursue something that would only benefit them in a scenario that no longer exists to them?
That's fair.
But that's why their academy isn't creating players, because there's no need for it to, because they can't get into the Premiership.
But that was meant to be their whole club ethos. So 2019, so 5 years. Yeah, so at least 5 years is what they've been...
Well, at least 4 years.
Yeah, but then... when it was set up, there was a route to the Premiership.
There was a route to the Premiership.
I see what you're saying. So, but...
It's like the...
Show me the incentive, exactly. I'll show you the behaviour.
The outcome.
Let's flip this on its head. What's the incentive just to employ ex-Premiership players on?
You can win rugby game this week.
If you only get players, say, who are 30-year-old journeymen, you win the Championship every year and you only pay those players.
It's a buyer's market
as
well.
If you want academy players, you've got to pay five guys 20, 30, 40k and hope that one of them comes good.
I want to see a showcase for Championship talent, and that is not it. It's a showcase for, really, the reason that the Championship is not doing well. So, or is not the argument, because all they can do is bring in X players from the Premiership.
I completely agree. That team is just X players from the Premiership. It's journeyman. And that's,
it's a vanity project.
So I agree with your point, but what I'm saying is that that is a product of the incentive that they've been presented with. In between 2019, mm-hmm. when they created that academy, and where we are now, the landscape for Ealing has totally changed. So in 2019, they had the incentive to do an Exeter.
Exeter brought in a lot of players.
Yeah, but they also brought through a lot of players.
Hang on. You're saying that the incentive is just to win the championship?
No.
Well, what is the incentive for?
So what was the incentive when Exeter won?
No, don't patronise me. I know that teams go up. What's the difference between teams going up and then winning the championship? Well, that's the same incentive. You do want to win the league.
Yeah, exactly winning the league incentive. Is the same. Yeah, but one leads to Premiership.
Yeah.
One doesn't lead to Premiership.
Right. All I'm saying is Ealing, where they are, and what they said, and with their mission statement, was all about developing players and having young talent coming through. That is what they said.
And if there's a player that's good, if there's a player that's good enough, they will.
Because they're not creating them, and this is the
argument. Why not? What, it costs.
It's not a lack of
money.
How
much money does it?
It's not a lack of money at Ealing.
I'm not saying it's a lack of money.
Right. So what's it? What's
I'm not saying it's a lack of money, but in order to get in enough players that you have the base of the pyramid that means you get the players at the top, and the coaching that supports that, and the administrative staff that supports that, uh-huh. and the medical staff that supports that, in order to spend all that, uh-huh. you could just go and get Will Goodrich-Clark for 40k.
Right, okay. So what we're now saying is that this is why they don't deserve to go up anyway now, because they've not invested in their infrastructure.
What?
So if then they can go up to the Premiership, you don't want them anyway, because they've spent all the money on... They've done the cheap thing to get Will Goodrich-Clark rather than do
the
coaching and the academy and everything else. And that is fundamentally the point.
Because the academy comes out of Ealing's own pockets, whereas the academy on the same patch, Harlequins, is paid for by the RFU.
It's not paid for by the RFU. There is a small amount of money, but most of it is borne
how
by...
Much?
The,
how much?
I think
small?
I think it's about 200k.
200k for an academy.
It's about that, yeah. It's not much.
I'm not buying that.
Well, you don't need to buy it. You can just pick up the phone and ask someone.
That's not.
It's dead easy. Just pick up the phone and ask someone. Isn't much, mate.
I'll tell you what's not much.
It's certainly
okay. I'll tell you what's not much is the money. What is not much is the funding that Championship clubs get versus Premiership.
I completely agree with you. Right. But Ealing's problem is
that's
not
a context.
Funding. Ealing's problem is not funding, is it?
Okay.
Is it? Is Ealing's problem funding? Is it that they don't have enough money for an academy, but they do for Will Goodrich? Well,
there's always a finite amount of money.
And in the
right, okay.
The immediate 2 years following setup of the academy, funding probably was a problem.
Well.
As in global travel shut down. So Ealing Trail Finders were not going to be pumping any money into their academy.
I imagine Trail Finders is a sponsor rather than the source of the cash. So I wouldn't worry too much.
It's a joint owner, isn't it?
Yeah, but I imagine I don't imagine Trail Finders Limited is the one writing the checks. I'm pretty sure it's Mr. Trail Finders that is writing the checks.
Yes, but he might have had slightly uncertain incomings.
Yeah, well, I'm not arguing with that. But, you know, I go back to my point. It was disappointing that Ealing are who they are now. And
so,
it's not a showcase of Championship talent, because it's undoubtedly not that.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I agree with that point, and I agree that it's... If they do have ambitions, if there is a route to get into the Premiership and they do have ambitions of doing an Exeter, the only way to do it is through having an academy. That is completely the right way.
The context is as well, within the last 2 years, three clubs went bust.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of players that are very, very cheap.
This is also true.
Yeah, good
it's
players that are
absolutely
cheap.
Absolutely true. But I just go back to that point. You know, if this was a club in Yorkshire, right, and it was just churning through loads of players, and those players were then leaving that Yorkshire club, which is quite possible with the amount of talent that they have, and then they were producing, you know, player after player, then you go, yeah, this is a club that we need.
But the squad does have a London Welsh feel to it at the moment.
And that's why you didn't...
The reason... So I said first, I thought they could compete in the Premiership, let's say that, because... They have got that talent that they've brought in, guys like Will Goodrich-Clark, or even someone who's not from the Premiership, like Bobby DeVee, who got a stupid yellow card.
Mm. Bobby DeVee.
Bobby DeVee.
Bobby DeVee.
Is a hell of a player. he's a good all-round athlete, intelligent second row. So they've got good players, but they've not got the structures, which I completely... it doesn't appear from this squad that they have the structures
in place. I'm almost certain they do. Well, this is what they were trying to build 5 years ago. So if they failed on that...
And that's my point exactly, that in those intervening 5 years, the landscape has changed.
Yeah.
So it might be that if they have a route to the Premiership, they go hell for leather for that academy side, because it would make sense. That is the only way that they get to do an Exeter. Because this team isn't, so this team's not doing an Exeter, this team's doing a London Welsh.
I'll stick up for the Championship and say the greatest showcase of the Championship is the Premiership.
I mean, go on.
Well, how many great players in the Premiership? And one of the greatest showcase of the Championship is England rugby.
I mean, I don't agree with that, unfortunately.
Pound for pound, what the Championship what the Championship clubs have invested versus the players they produce.
There's a good number of players historically who've played for England who have got good Championship experience.
Yeah, experience would be the key word, not development.
Yeah, because like a couple of great examples in the England team at the moment, Joe Marler and Dan Cole. Both played at that level, but they weren't. They were Leicester and Quinn's academies who were then loaned out to get that.
The reason
experience.
I don't like that comment is because I think, I don't even think it's fair on the Championship to expect it, really. Like you've alluded to, it has been gutted by the RFU. And I just think, like, that's not true. But it's not true because they've done a bad job. It's not true because, you know, they're not allowed the players. Like, they're simply just not allowed them. They either go on loan.
Again, I would go back to the time before the swingeing cuts came in. And the Championship had a modicum of funding from and a route to the Premiership. And I think, I'm just trying to think of a player that's playing now. Friend of the pod.
Harry Williams came from...
Mark Atkinson. Bedford.
And Sedgley before that.
Sedgley Park and Bedford.
Another one let go by Steve Diamond.
But at that time, so we're going back maybe 10 years, the Championship was prolific at producing top-class
players.
Yes,
I think
players.
That's probably where you need to be. I mean, right now it's definitely
No. But there's the context in that isn't the context in that is the cause and effect. The money that's been gutted from Championship clubs and the...
Where did it go?
Huh?
Where did it go?
Yeah.
Where did it go?
Yeah. Well, I'm not even going to get into that. We know where that money went.
We're on a positive of women's sport at the moment on this podcast, so we're not going to follow that thread.
I don't know what you were talking about. That's what I was going to say, Phil.
No, look.
A robust and interesting discussion, that.
I'm kind of with you. The Championship should be somewhere where you can leave Premiership rugby and almost be maintained as a high-quality Premiership player.
Or if you're a prop, exactly as you said.
Yeah.
Again, I would say England have lost two World Cup matches against South Africa because they don't have any props during the same period of time when Championship has been gutted and the sort of... opportunities for players like Joe Marler and Dan Cole, which Phil mentioned, have not existed in the way they existed 10 years ago. I'm absolutely confident to say there is a cause and effect there. And one of Phil's former teammates that we mentioned a bunch of times on this, Petrus Duplessis, European Cup winner.
Who came over to first play. You know what club he first played at when he came to England?
Petrus Duplessis.
But wasn't Sedgley Park?
Wasn't Sedgley.
Liverpool St Helens.
Liverpool St Helens.
Yeah.
Everything links back to St Helens.
Liverpool St Helens.
And before
then
that is
Park.
Probably one of the other great breeding grounds for international high calibre players. I think it was Stellenbosch University.
Nice.
So that's.
Do you know.
Tried and tested route.
The Championship as an entity, it'd be nice to sort of get it going again. I think they need to try something completely different. I would like to see the regionalisation of all the leagues. I think National League rugby should be ditched. Because I honestly think that when you're paying the amount of money that you're paying these lads, it's not much. It really isn't much. You can get lads playing level three. And you're talking about, like, what do you say, Phil? £400 a week?
If you're lucky, that's decent.
Yeah.
£200 a week?
Decent.
Yeah, yeah.
You're literally just being paid to wake up early in the morning and travel.
Yeah. £100 a game for many lads.
So the amount of lads that drop out but do not drop down the leagues because of that is huge.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge.
Because the commitment is, if you're playing that...
That's why I stopped playing National 1.
Yeah.
If you're playing that Tier 1, National 1, Tier 3, National 1, then it is for 30 weeks of the year, it's your full Saturday gone. Yeah. And sometimes even your Friday, like I remember setting off to Redruth or Launceston. Mm.
Great, great road trips.
The road trip back is great.
Yeah.
On a Saturday night when you're having a few cans. Road trip down, I remember setting off at midday on a Friday.
Horrendous.
Having to take the afternoon off work.
Yep.
Midday on Friday, getting stuck on the M6 and M4.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For hours and hours and hours, taking 10, 12 hours. Like you arrive down in Cornwall just as like the restaurant is shutting in the hotel you're staying in, so you have to have like cold food, and it's
awful. The whole thing's awful.
Yeah, just
for 80 minutes of rugby.
So if you say like
and for 100 quid,
yeah,
and like, all the leagues that, should be
below minimum wage if you counted the hours that you're on the clock.
Yeah, they should all be regional. So like the top league in Lancashire should be something, and they should have those repeat games over and over again, because those are the games that mean something to people. So when you're in National League, there's a good chance that you do not see your local rival for years. Now, I don't even know who Sedgley Park's local rival is. It used to be Preston, probably Macclesfield at one point.
Bury.
Maybe Sale.
Historically, I guess the closest club would be Broughton, not Broughton Park.
Yeah.
Is Bury not just round the corner?
Bury...
I mean, that's like a level 9.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, right.
But it's not far away. It's probably 15 minutes drive.
There might be level 8. I don't know, actually.
Or Bury New
Road.
You
want repeats of these great... I mean, imagine like...
Broughton Park, Didsbury yesterday.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's a historic fixture.
Well, actually, it's not.
Broughton Park, Wilmslow is a historic fixture.
Broughton Park, Wilmslow is a cracking fixture. Broughton Park, Toc H is not a historic... It's the first time our first teams have ever played each other and we're running distance... From each other.
But Broughton Park, Wilmslow, because I went to Wilmslow because my old man is a lifetime member there, and he was meeting up with a load of the old boys. And that game used to happen back in the like 70s, and there was England internationals on both teams.
Wilmslow famously turned away Will Carling because he expected to start. He's like, no, we're happy with that sentence, thanks. And he's like, well, do you know who I am? I was like, it doesn't really matter. We're not starting you.
I love it.
Yeah. So that's how I think they should do it. They should just regionalise the whole thing and get rid of National League rugby, because I think you keep a load more lads in. The more lads that you keep in, the higher the overall standard of playing, because you play better with good players. And then you start to get local communities engaged, because the best will in the world, no matter how much I like Phil, I'm not going to watch him play at Launceston, right? But I might go and watch him play at Preston, and I might go play at Macclesfield, and the Macclesfield crowd might go and watch him play at Sedgley Park. And if you keep it all regional,
and
you save the money.
Yeah, if that's tied to a representative pathway that they used to have, like I was just going all full circle onto the lads in my son's team that are really, really good. If they end up playing really well for a local team, playing a big matchup, well, they're going to get spotted, play for Lancashire, and that's going to really mean something.
And then this is where it could all tie into a unified global season. And what we've spoken about before, in having like the stratified sections of this in the top tier, this is your domestic country, this is your regional, like European or Southern Hemisphere international or club tournament, and then this is your international window, where you could have a condensed, because there's fewer teams or regional teams playing, condensed club regional league, and then go on to representative.
Well, this is the beauty of one competition that the RFU have got correct, which is last year's much maligned Papa John's Cup, which I think is a brilliant invention, by the way.
Where this is, you're competing in your across the whole country in your kind of band.
I'm not sure you do go across the whole country. So,
ultimately, you could play.
I think so.
So ultimately, someone from the northeast could.
All level 6 and level 7 clubs in the country, for example, would be lumped together.
Yes.
Ultimately. You play against local teams first, and then
in the semi final.
The reason
I'm
saying that, maybe it's a random draw, but it seems like all of our fixtures this year are from Yorkshire. That could be a coincidence. I don't know. So we've got Harrogate Pythons, we've got whoever else. But that would be, wouldn't it, like you win your regional league and then everything culminates in Twickenham. And if you're still around when you get to Twickenham, Premiership clubs are going to be going to those games. They're going to be going to all of those games saying you. And the quality would be so high because, of course, you're keeping all those players that would otherwise be not involved in rugby because they don't want to travel and they don't want to drop down the leagues in the game. It'd be so much better.
Yeah. So that's the interesting bit for me, because it's the number of lads that drop out is enormous, and a big thing is the huge travel for virtually no money.
Mm.
So if you don't keep those in, you've got if you don't keep significantly more to outweigh the what would be a reduced quality in league, then there's a trade-off.
Yeah. It would start off, I believe, as a reduced quality league.
But the idea would be it would improve.
Yeah. So I just look at the Liverpool clubs, right? So you've got Birkenhead Park, who used to be an absolute powerhouse. You've got LSH, who at one point were very good. And you've got Coventry,
Collegiate, Southport, New
powerhouse.
Brighton, Coldy.
Waterloo,
of course. Like, these are great clubs. Now, if they manage to keep all of their players, like, regionally, that is one hell of a competition.
Mm.
And you want to watch it every single year, and it's going to get tasty, and it's going to get a bit violent. I mean, this is what we want to see.
Well, we tried to organise that again with my son's team in mind. At under 6, well, it was under 15 level when we looked at doing it. We got in touch with. We thought, what clubs are inside the M60 or around the M60 in Manchester, and could we just get all those? Like, I think it was like eight or nine clubs. Could we get them all together and go over the course of a season? We'll play home and away, and we'll just make a league. And just have a little, like...
I can't imagine the bureaucracy that you run into here.
100%.
Is that what happened?
Lancashire Union got wind of this and just went, no, you cannot do it.
Why? For what reason? Insurance?
I don't know. They thought it would... They were worried it would take precedence or it would take more prestige over their Lancashire Cup.
So the only thing
they
I would
were
say...
absolutely against it.
The only thing I would say in Lancashire's defence here... And I'm not one to defend Lancashire or the RFU, but I will say this, is I saw something like this happen with Toc H and some of the Cheshire clubs, and we made our own league because they didn't want to travel. I thought that was a disgraceful decision. But actually, once there's a terminal velocity of clubs, like a critical mass, you just have to sort of join. Mm. You have to join because you have... But it screwed over all the Cumbrian teams, and they didn't deserve that. So, I mean, I don't think Lancashire are that forward-facing. Remember, I've been to some of their meetings, and... You know, they are worried about the prestige of the league. But, you know, if you had an inner M60 league, which was absolutely kicking off, you know, that'd be awesome. But that's not what they want. They want everyone in Lancashire to be able to play high-quality rugby.
We weren't saying we wouldn't carry on playing against Macclesfield and Wilmslow and
they just see it as competition.
We just wanted a Manchester championship.
That'd be awesome.
Mm.
Who do you have? Winnies?
TMV, Winnies... Old Winnians.
TMV are not inside
They're not
the
inside
M60.
The M60, they're outside, but they're close enough.
They are a stone's throw.
They are stone's throw.
If you can throw a stone,
you can see
the
M60. You can see the M60 from their pitch. So I think that counts. So it's TMV, it was Broughton Park, it was Old Winnians, as you mentioned.
Going round
Burnage.
Ironically, not Manchester in a Manchester
not,
league.
No, they're in the Stockport League.
They are out, yeah.
And then you have...
Well, the Cheshire League.
I'm just thinking round the north. We counted Sedgley Park because it's not far.
Yeah. Again, from the...
Well, if you count them, do you count like Bury? What, De La Salle?
De La Salle's inside.
A lot of them don't have teams at that age group, but yeah.
You don't want to be playing De La Salle. Yeah. Broughton?
Don't have a team.
Do they not? No. Who else is there? Beeds?
Don't have a team.
Toc H?
Don't have a team.
Heatonmore?
Yes, Heatonmore.
Is there another one somewhere?
There's probably another one in Salford somewhere.
Is there another one?
What's that? What's that, like, proper...
Oh, Duckingfield?
Duckingfield, yes.
I mean, that is quite a way outside the M60.
That is outside
You're up on a hill. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We didn't have them in it.
You're in the Pennines.
No, you're not.
That's Duckingfield. That's not Duckingfield. Duckingfield's like close to Manchester.
It's like Ashton-under-Lyne.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but you're...
Ashton-under-Lyne?
You are, no. As you're going up into the Pennines.
Anyway.
I feel Duckingfield inside the M60.
I love the idea of regional
stuff. It's definitely not inside the M60.
Localise it. I want my politics localised as possible, and I want my rugby as localised as possible.
Exactly right.
I'm with you. Totally agree. Should we look ahead to Six Nations a little bit?
Yeah, why not?
Oh, talking about like prestige and pathways and stuff, I have just booked flights to go to... I'm going to South Africa twice this year.
I thought you were. Do you know why I thought that?
Why?
Because we keep getting bloody emails about your trip. It's like, oh, Tim, when are you in South Africa? Like, Tim's not going to South Africa. That's ridiculous.
I'm going in... I was going to go for the two island tests, June, July, last week of July, first 2 weeks in July, and I am going for those. But what I have done is extended my trip so I get a bit of what they call Craven Week. Have you heard of Craven Week?
Oh, I have, yes. So, Jono Ross made his name in Craven Week. Oh, Craven Week's going to be absolutely superb.
The colleges.
It's the schools. The school. It's the schools championship.
So, reluctantly,
the top 20 schools in South Africa and Zimbabwe get together and they play this tournament over 1 week, and I'm going to be there at the final 3 days of that.
So, reluctantly, Phil, I will admit that Duckingfield is fairly outside the M60.
It's only... I've just looked up as well. It's maybe 2K, 3K. Outside.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't think they were one of the teams. But anyway, doesn't matter. So I'm going to be at Craven Week,
So where is that?
Well, this year it's just outside. It's in Krugersdorp, which is near Johannesburg.
Okay.
So the first test for Ireland v South Africa, South Africa v Ireland, is in Pretoria.
Yeah.
So I will fly into Johannesburg, go straight to Krugersdorp. For a few days and then
go to Pretoria.
Well, maybe do some stuff between.
You'll find some
Eccles.
You'll find some good national
Eccles.
Yes. They are.
They are.
And again, just. They are a stone's throw.
The M60 runs by the pitch.
Yeah. Good shout. Yes.
So that, and I'm looking forward to seeing some of those lads from Gray's College and.
There'll be some handy talent there. This will be like the 20 under 20s in 2015. Was it 2015?
Oh, yeah.
When you scouted Jordy Barrett and Andrew Porter.
And Peter Steph Tatoy and...
Yes.
Antoine Dupont.
And Stockers.
Yeah, and what's his name? Porter.
Yeah, all those boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll be coming back
with
some scouting tips. That's trip number one.
That's trip number one. Trip number two is in last week in August, first week in September, South Africa v New Zealand, two tests.
Awesome. So where are the two tests? Cape Town?
So the island tests are Pretoria and Durban.
Nice.
And the...
Durban's good fun.
New Zealand tests are Johannesburg and...
Cape Town.
I want to get into Johannesburg as close to the start of the match as possible.
Mm. Yes.
No, nothing against Johannesburg. I'll spend my time in Cape Town.
Well, yes. Do you know I say I don't want to go east?
Sorry?
Yeah. The way I say I don't want to go east, I have very similar feelings about South Africa now. Like, not really that interested, to be honest. I'm sure I've been there twice.
Wonderful people.
The people that I'd mix with are not really the problem. I just think it's too dangerous. I just think it's far, far too dangerous. There's just no way.
So I went to South Africa 8 years ago, which coincided with your second trip to South Africa. And it felt then a bit like, how many more, like, amazing, like, truly amazing country, phenomenal geography, wildlife, food, drink, everything, climate, all absolutely off the chart. But it felt then, like, when I was in Cape Town then, there was... kind of rolling
blackouts
and limit on water use, and that has only got worse since that point. It kind of feels like
everything's failing there, isn't it?
Like, yeah, like you wouldn't dream of going to Zimbabwe at the moment.
It's basically
there's lots of rugby players who are only playing outside Zimbabwe because they're born in Zimbabwe and can no longer live in Zimbabwe.
I'm spending 5 years, five weeks of this summer there.
The good news is
it will be amazing.
Yeah, it'll be amazing.
It is amazing, and it's one of the few places in the world where you get a lot for your pound.
You'll go there with your English wealth, okay? and you'll have an amazing time. But the good news is you'll get an accurate representation of what Britain's going to be like in 20 years.
Oh, dear.
But Cape Town's amazing, though, right?
Cape Town is amazing.
Is it just common? Surely it's just common sense stuff. Anyway, I'll talk about this nearer the time.
It is common sense. I'll tell you a few stories I didn't apply common sense that I would strongly recommend. Basically,
get taxis everywhere.
At the night, in the nighttime, Uber everywhere. Just Uber everywhere. It's dirt cheap and much, much safer.
Okay, cool. Logged.
We've got some games next week to talk about.
Games. I'm going up to Scotland for England.
Are you?
Bloody hell, you're doing some miles now, Tim.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Well, got to go where the stories are, JB.
Yeah, you got. You got to use those expenses. It's tax evasion, isn't it, to go on all these holidays?
So, games chronological order. We have 2:15 on Saturday, Ireland hosting Wales. Which can anyone see anything other than a five league point win for Ireland?
No.
I'd love to say I could because I want Wales to win. I'd love them to beat Ireland, although I think Ireland are going to fall at the final hurdle.
Against England?
Yeah, because it's Ireland, isn't it? So
no, they do all
no,
right.
No, they'll win this.
In between.
Yeah, they'll win this Grand Slam. It'll be the best Grand Slam they've ever won. They'll get hammered, and then they'll lose Europe. That's what I think will happen.
So, Ireland smash Wales. Then, the interesting game of the week, because on Sunday we've got France versus Italy, which no one really cares about. France are going to handily beat them. Saturday afternoon, 4:45, the worst kickoff time for me. I will not be watching at that time. I will go dark at about half four.
Why?
And watch it at 8 p.m.
Why? Or just
so I can actually watch the game.
Before we get to that one, why is this matchup is it Dublin, the Ireland? Is it Ireland, Wales?
Ireland, Dublin, yeah.
Why is this particular fixture in Dublin significant?
Historic.
God. Historic.
The final.
I know. It's because. It's because rugby hates its audience, doesn't it? That's effectively it.
It's not doing what Courtney Law says.
Yeah, because apparently, if we don't have the colour-blind crowd, what do we have? And the answer is nothing. And you know this is a bad idea, not because I say it's a bad idea, but because of all the people that say it's a good idea.
If you haven't seen the story, it'll be the last time that Wales wear red and Ireland wear green in a test match.
Yeah, I mean, colour blindness is a very serious. And I fully sympathise with anyone who suffers from it. But on the other hand, I think your national colours are too important. And if this is my cap, I want my jersey on and I want to play. Because we do tend to forget, don't we? The game is not actually for the audience. I'm sure people say that they well, depends how you look at it. But one of the ways that you can look at it, certainly the way that I look at it, is it's primarily for the players. When you pull on that jersey at international level, you've earned that. And if your only international cap is in the horrible yellow jersey that Wales wore, God knows how long ago, or the absolutely foul purple jersey that England issued, or any other absolute monstrosities which these alternative kits invariably are, it's rubbish for you. It is absolutely rubbish. Play your national colours. I was watching.
What about Lions v South Africa?
Good point.
Crikey.
Great point.
Don't know. Presumably South Africa have got to play in white. But they should be playing in their national colours. They should be, because they're the national colours. And all the people that say, oh, if you're getting angry about this, you know, they're all exactly the people that you...
I'd like to know how many... colourblindness is a thing. It's real. It exists.
It is, yeah.
How many people who are colourblind are complaining that this is a problem? That's what I would like to know. Because...
Yeah. It's very much the vegetarian issue, right? So the vegetarian issue, it goes something like this, which is, if you are expecting no vegetarians, you basically just have, pepperoni pizza. If you're expecting one vegetarian, like half the pizzas then become vegetarian because you always cater for this minority all the time. So it only takes two or three people to make a real racket, and then you've got to change the whole sport. So, yeah, that's all that's happened here.
What they used
it is a it is a real issue.
Yeah, it is.
It's
a real
just
issue.
Not important enough for me to really change the game for. Mm. Well, that's hard.
One thing they used to do when you look at old fixtures, and you can see the colorized pictures, but many people had black and white televisions, so the color was taken out of the fact. Wales quite often would play with black shorts. Against Ireland, for example.
There you go.
So that's That's one way. Or you have a special kit.
Yeah, why can't the shorts change? That's a great point.
Shorts is a nice, easy way. Or you have a special kit, which serves two purposes. So you have red and green, but the red might have a detailing of stripes and the green might have a detailing of hoops. Or you only actually need to change one of them. Give the away team the stripes, well, or the hoops. So allows you to then sell another kit, which, even though it's not always the best idea to have multiple kits, it will raise a bit of extra cash. Mm-hmm. You can do something a little bit different.
One of the things I wanted to steal from the NFL was the mandatory white kit.
Yeah.
Everyone has to have a white kit.
I do like that.
Yeah.
But the problem is, England and Fiji is their primary kit.
The home team gets to choose the away team. So there's always like a way to get around this. So if you're the away team, the home team changes kit.
Yeah, which they didn't.
They've changed that.
Yeah, because Scotland-France didn't apply that.
Yeah, they've now changed that it's the home team that changes.
Yeah.
No, it used to be that.
It used to be that. Sorry, yes.
So Scotland played in the dark blue, even though they were
And that's a historic thing, because a club would turn up and they go, oh, we've got the same kit.
Yeah.
And you're the home club. Oh, we'll go and get our other shirts.
And it's also, it feels right, because it feels hospitable.
Mm.
So I quite like that. Yeah, I just don't think it's important enough. But, you know, the people that make the decisions in rugby are so enamoured with everything else other than the people that enjoy rugby. It's beyond me. It is beyond me.
Do what Courtney Law says. Celebrate why people actually play and love the game, which is brutal physicality.
God, imagine getting your only cap in that England purple shirt. What was the point in the hard work?
So I watched a game Saturday night. A free-to-air rugby game on Saturday night, which was... I was appalled.
Oh, I know.
I was appalled at the colour of the
Ulster
kit.
Ulster.
No.
That was lost to Cardiff.
I believe...
Ospreys,
sorry.
Yeah,
I believe it would be the blue of Wigan.
The blue...
Why were Wigan playing in blue? I thought exactly this.
This fixture might be the single most watched fixture of all rugby league games ever.
So are we talking Wigan and St Helens?
No.
There wasn't St Helens. It was...
Wigan-Leeds? So,
as in, this game... A bit of this game, actually, probably this game is the most viewed game of all time in rugby league. I would go as far to make that statement.
Is it Cass? Was it Cass?
It was Cass.
Yeah.
Because Wigan v Cass is the game with the famous Mick Morgan.
Oh, yes.
I can't speak.
Give me a yellow card.
That's another thing that this podcast takes credit for.
I can't take credit for Mick Morgan's genius.
No, I'm not taking credit for his genius. I'm taking credit. I think
he would have been found. That kind of genius doesn't say.
I think we took that Mick Morgan bit of genius and on our podcast 10 years ago sent it out into the rugby
union. And those
union
10
world.
People that were listening told all their mates.
Yeah, exactly.
So in that you had both in hoops, you had primarily orange and black of the Castleford Tigers, obviously, and the red and white hoops is there. There is the kits of that very clip.
It's crazy, isn't it? Like, who like wants that, to watch Wigan in blue?
If you look at that, I genuinely believe that clip will be the most shared rugby clip of all time.
It's
shared all around the world.
Like from a commercial point of view, and this is
why are they not wearing? Why are they not celebrating like
that?
Enjoying that, celebrating that. No, the Wigan kit was this bluey purple. It just You had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't.
It's like, again, we've talked about this before. It was a nice idea at the time, but in years to come, Exeter Chiefs will rue wearing lilac when they won their double. If that's the only time they ever win the European Cup, they've got a photo not in their classic club colours.
The only people I forgive for dreadful kits is the Ospreys. Because... It has to be a dreadful kit to be an Ospreys kit now. They don't have any heritage, do they? It's not like you look back at the olden days like, God, that was a great Ospreys kit. They've always been disgusting.
And there are certain French teams.
Yeah.
So not your Racing 92s, not your Toulouse's. Not Racing 92 or Toulouse specifically. But there are other teams like, say Montpellier or Pau or Perpignan. They have to have kind of
60 sponsors.
Far too many sponsors. Far too
that.
Busy.
And if I may, I was at Wilmslow Rugby Club yesterday, and my, in the little box of memory stuff that's in the loft at my mum's house. I've had this, and I've got my eye on the shirt. Is a cotton, thick cotton Wilmslow shirt.
Nice.
Sky blue. It's got the white hoop with the
navy
with the maroon,
oh, marine, yeah,
with the maroon trim around the white hoop, and the number is on a diamond. So it's a diamond
patch, not
a square. Not. It's the same shape as the square, but it's tilted round 45 degrees or 90 degrees. 45 degrees.
Yeah.
So that it's at a diamond shape, and that's the shirt. And I was delighted when the Wilmslow team ran out onto the pitch. It was sky blue, white hoop with the maroon detail on the hoop, and the numbers on a diamond.
Oh, the diamond is an unusual touch these days. I think that's classy.
I love that.
Yeah, so
and it means something. It does.
It's all about history, isn't it? Like, you turn on an American football game and you know you're watching the Dallas Cowboys. You know you're watching the 49ers. But how sad is it that you turn on the TV and even for a rugby fan, I'm not a massive rugby league fan, but I instantly recognise one of the most famous sports teams of all time. So one of the most successful British sports teams of all time is in blue.
Yeah. And
it's a disgrace.
They always had that as their change kit.
But they didn't need to change.
No, they didn't need to change.
Yeah.
Just
didn't need to.
There is absolutely zero need to change.
And Cass have got plenty of history. Anyway, this isn't about Cass and Wigan. No. But we do this in the Premiership all the time.
Oh, yeah. But it is that goal. And then I like the idea of having a white alternative kit and your other idea of having, was it a 4-year freeze on kit changes?
100%. 100%.
I'd love one club just to, or it'd have to be a few clubs, to run the numbers and see. I mean, you could get the numbers from the NFL,
but
I guess.
Yeah. You could have the same design, but then you could just go, oh, we're going to release a throwback cotton version of our current kit.
Yeah.
I'll buy it. Yeah.
Here's an actual match replica
special.
One. Make it, yeah.
Because the fans, there's very few fans who are buying every kit every year anyway, unless you're a psychopath. Psychopath, yes. Yeah. Rugby,
or you're
very
eight.
Few. Yeah. Eight-year-old football fanatics will have every kit. Other than that, no one has it.
Well, they tend to buy in three or four-year cycles, I would guess.
Yeah,
but they're
yeah.
all staggered. So yeah, they yeah. think they're selling more shirts, and they're not.
They're not.
Because if you just have the one shirt for 4 years, everyone would buy it instantly, and then the next one comes out, and then everyone buys that instantly.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It'd be, I guess it might be unevenly distributed cash flow, but it'd be so much better. You'd sell so many. I would buy the Sale shirt. If Sale had one kit every 4 years, I would buy it, without a doubt.
Well, and they'd have to make sure it was
spot on.
Absolutely spot on. Like Leicester Tigers
would
never release this year's kit if they knew it was going to be their kit for 4 years.
No, they would have that lovely one with the single stripe
or the
mint green. And they'd do something nice. Like, they'd never, ever attempt to have that faded hoop design. That would be mental for that for 4 years.
Right, to finish,
shall
we talk about some actual rugby again?
Do we have to?
That is going to happen next weekend. Give me your predictions.
Finn Russell versus England's blitz defence. Who comes out on top?
Finn Russell, I'd say.
Because South Africa shut down Finn Russell in the World Cup.
They did, actually. They completely closed him down.
Yeah. Felix Jones will have seen him more than a few times.
But then again, Italy managed to pick apart England's blitz defence, and Wales,
true,
with a couple of inside pops, managed to get through England's blitz defence. So it's still a work in progress.
Right. They have nowhere near the level of cohesion that South Africa do. Not even on the same page. Interesting. Because Finn Russell's kicking game is very, very astute. Short and long. He's had some beautiful long kicks in this tournament already.
Well, I'm just looking at the rugby paper there in front of you, Phil. It says, Russell gives Scotland the edge for the Calcutta Cup. A bold opinion to give for Jerry Guscott.
Well, at this point,
I have to agree. I don't often agree with Guscott, but I agree with that headline.
Yeah, at this point, you've got to say Finn Russell's the best right half in the competition. Jalibert is probably... him and Jalibert, one and two. Yeah. I don't know which way around, but they're up there.
No, Finn is number one. I think it's actually Finn then Ford. Jalibert's a superb player. He beats lots of defenders. He carries too much, if anything. He's not got the tactical acumen. Yeah, oh. France has struggled in their two games.
Actually, can I just talk about some rugby before we talk about actual rugby?
Of course.
Have you noticed that Gobisi is moving clubs?
Yes, mid-season. Toulon.
Have you seen this? Yeah. So Gobisi's going to Toulon. And that got me thinking, like, well, hang on a minute. Who's going to play at Montpellier, because they've just got rid of like two world class fly halves. Like it just doesn't matter.
And they've just hammered Henry Arundel's Racing 92.
Yeah. So have they
hammered him? Yeah, so, in Paris.
Do you know who plays 10 for Montpellier?
I will know it when you say it.
As soon as I say his name, you'll know.
It's not the guy who left Toulon.
Yes, Louis Carbonell.
Carbonell, that's it.
Right, so Louis Carbonell now plays. So Toulon have got rid of their fly half. So at one point, presumably they had all three of these fly halves on the books. Carbonell's gone over to Montpellier. Montpellier have lost Garbisi to Toulon.
Yep.
Toulon also...
They've got Dan Bigger.
They've got Dan Bigger. But prior to Dan Bigger, they experimented with the La Rochelle fly half.
Ehaya West.
Ehaya West. Which means that Hastoy gets a go. The point I'm trying to make here is I was thinking, like, how do these French fly halves progress? Because they're constantly chopping and changing. Mm. Like, Pelisson?
Plisson.
Jules Plisson. Yeah. He's obviously not a French player, but he was at one point, and he's been absolutely everywhere.
Yeah,
you know, and so
well, Cami Lopez's Bayonne got a win against Clermont yesterday, so that's all.
Yeah, hammered Clermont.
Very few of these French fly halves are having any sort of continuity with their club.
Yeah, oh, Jalibert might be the
Jalibert and Entermac. I can't imagine Entermac.
Yeah,
ever
Entermac's going nowhere, and Jalibert hopefully not as well.
There again, we have George Ford, and he's not exactly Mr. Consistent when it comes to clubs. But yeah. Owen Farrell. Has
phenomenally consistent.
Never moved.
Marcus Smith.
Smith won't move. I doubt Finn Smith will move until it's time for his last contract.
Yeah, Marcus Smith, it depends. If he stays second or third choice, you could see him going to France at the end of his deal.
Yeah,
or
well,
even possibly before.
I reckon if that happens, the end of his deal, Harlequins will go and make him the most expensive player on the Harlequins. In the Harlequins squad by a country mile.
Which he probably already is, other than Esterhazen.
Yeah, I'm sure he's already the marquee. But yeah.
Oh, yeah, he will be.
In terms of fly halves, who was fly half yesterday for the top of the table team in
Racing.
The top 14?
Gilbert.
For the top of the table, is Leon top of the table?
No, Leon is second bottom. Paddy Jackson.
No, they're not second. Montpellier are off the bottom. They're second bottom now, and Oyonnax are bottom. But
okay.
So second in the top 14 is Toulouse, who was playing fly half for them most recently.
Oh, it's the lad from Worcester.
Searle.
Billy Searle.
For Toulouse. No. Actually, he wasn't playing there yesterday. But
brilliant.
Antoine Dupont last week was playing 10 for Toulouse.
He played.
Looking awesome.
So what are the choices? Antoine Dupont or Billy Searle?
No. So what? It was Juan Cruz Malia playing 10 for Toulouse.
Okay.
But wow. The top of the table team in the top 14 is Stade Francais.
Is it? So what table? Gustard, Stade Francais.
What table was I looking at?
And they beat Perpignan yesterday. And who is
it's
who was
the
fly
lad,
half?
The lad who went to Leicester from France has gone back to France.
Henry.
Zach Henry.
Zach Henry, fly half for the top of the table in top 14.
Yeah, that
get him into England.
That is incredible, isn't it?
It's quite something.
Mm. But who's been the fly half in Europe though? It isn't him. It's a French lad. Whose name escapes me now.
Well, they rotated in Europe, didn't they, after they got hammered by Sale? They basically just...
I'm sure they had. So that was a weakened team.
Going Sagan? No.
That doesn't ring a bell.
Let me have a look. Big home match. Let's pick the La Rochelle game at home. They've picked their best team for that one. And it was Sagan's.
Yeah, maybe it is him then. Yeah, he was the one that... Yeah, maybe it is him that I've watched in Europe.
Oh my God, I was looking at the Bayonne versus Clermont. You had, your boys had Camille Lopez. Obviously
Lopez.
Famous Clermont stalwart.
Yep.
And Clermont had Erda Paletta.
Yeah.
He must be nearly 40, late 30s now. He is ancient.
No, he can't, he's not, no. 35.
He is 38 in 3 weeks' time.
Maxime Machinot 9 and Cami Lopez 10. I love it.
At this rate, he'll be playing at Ealing.
Right, England Scotland. Who's gonna get the better? I'm gonna go for Scotland.
I think Scotland.
They,
so, I've spoken to a couple of Scotland fans in the last couple of weeks who are really hurting about that final decision, losing that game. Not just the final decision, but Scotland had other opportunities to win it as well. And the bottom line is Scotland should have beaten France. And I think the players will just be focused on beating England. They've got the edge over England over the last few years anyway, and they've got an extra incentive to do so this week. Therefore, give me Scotland.
Unfortunately, bearing in mind I'm going to be there, Scotland. I've never been to an England-Scotland game in Scotland, and I gather it's quite the hostile atmosphere. I'm looking forward to that.
I've been to Murrayfield a few times. I don't think I've ever watched England there. I've watched Wales there several times. I've watched Ulster there. But yeah, I don't think I've ever been to England. Mm.
No, I've never seen an England game. But yeah, that's one thing I've heard is it's pretty, like, as international atmospheres go, it's like you'll feel the edge, which I'm quite excited about.
That will be good.
Yeah.
It will be a good game, that. Mm. That is the game of the weekend.
And the other
by
two
far.
Comfortable wins, unfortunately.
I think Wales will put up a fight for at least the first half.
I would be surprised if Wales score more than 7 points.
Mm.
And Ireland will score at least 30. So from that, I'm saying a minimum three to four
That's
score
a fairly
win.
Comprehensive
what,
win.
Do you know what the bookie's saying? What's the spread on the handicap? Can you look that up? Because they got it absolutely bang on last week. The last game against Italy, they said the handicap was 34 points to Ireland and Ireland won 36-0.
Mm.
So these bookies know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Except when it comes to Premiership rugby, when you can actually make money. I can actually do that now.
No, you're not.
Yes.
I can technically start betting on Premiership rugby.
Do it. Do it. You can be the next Rob Holy. Poor Rob Holy. Do you ever read the bets that he's putting on? They weren't even good bets. Like £2 here, £3 there. Like they weren't.
So the handicap on Betfair exchange at the moment, the handicap is Scotland -3.
Really?
Yeah, and what did I say? So I said Wales no more than 7, Ireland about 30, which would make a 23-point spread. The bookies have got it at a 22-point spread.
The bookies and Phil know what they're talking about.
And France-Italy is a 28-point lead given to France, which again, it's probably about right.
Ireland-Wales?
22 points.
Yeah, 22 points.
So the bookie, I think
so the exchange Ireland markets are saying a narrow England win?
No.
Oh, a narrow Scotland win.
Narrow Scotland win. Yeah, okay. Scotland -3.
Oh, okay. Right, got
you. Yes.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
I think it probably is.
Excellent.
Right.
Done.
Thank you very much for listening. Hit subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Patreon.com/eggchasers. And well done on the podcast from Mark Evans. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. So we're aiming for the first Tuesday of every month to discuss business.
Yes.
So lots and lots of business.
I like the suggested name of Eggonomics. I really like.
Mark likes that one.
I think it's great.
It's quite good. Don't know.
It's not twee. It's good.
I think it's
clever.
I think you need a subtitle in that then. I think it's really clever.
Eggonomics, the business of rugby.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe.
Eggonomics, colon. The business of rugby.
We will think about it. He is fascinating. Do you think?
So I've not listened to this one, but I've listened to him in the past. I find him endlessly
fascinating. I mean, obviously, it requires the raw talent to bring the fascinating aspect of him out, which is me. But he is fascinating, of course.
So you're saying you're the Stephen Bartlett of the situation?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm the straw that stirs the drink. No, on a serious note, it's awesome. It is absolutely. Did you listen to the? Did you get to the part where?
I've listened. Phil hasn't.
Oh, you haven't listened.
I've not yet. I'm gonna put it.
So
next
the bit
on my
which I enjoyed of all the bits was talking about the TV broadcasting.
Yeah,
because it's like proper economic development, Matt.
You've
got a skill set which nation did not have, and now it has it.
Now it has it. Yeah,
and that's legit.
And going from a crew of 30 people and all the equipment to now they only need two external people outside of Fiji, and they have the equipment natively. That's massive,
isn't it?
That's
so massive. Cool. It
and you don't
so
you cool. don't think about that sort of thing when you're just watching it. But yeah. that's huge.
If Drua were a Premiership team, Phil, and they could get and that Premiership team could get the same numbers proportionally that Druid do in Fiji.
As a proportion of the total population.
Yeah. How many people would be watching that?
I know the answer.
That team on a weekend on TV.
In England. Okay. So
a proportionate number, because there's only one team. So, there's only one super rugby team. So let's just imagine England had one Premiership, one. Oh, so it doesn't matter. So yeah. let's take it as a Champions Cup final in England. An English team are in the Champions Cup final. How many people would be watching that in England?
1 million.
As an equivalent, so 1/60th of the population.
Well, so I'm working that at about 2%.
Okay. It would be, so if it was an equivalent population in Fiji, the number of people that watched Drua on television in Fiji.
Oh, sorry, on television. Yeah, television. Oh, television.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So if you try to extrapolate.
Sorry, I was thinking in the game. Yeah. So I was working at, like, let me just explain my maths. I was working at about 1 million people in Fiji. I think it's a bit over that, but round numbers. And 20,000 people in the stadium.
Oh, got you.
So 2% of that. 2% of 50 million for nice, easy round numbers would be about 1 million people.
I get you thinking. But now, number of people that watch the Drua in Fiji on telly, how many, to make it equivalent, how many people would be watching in England?
12 million? 20% of the population? More? 40, 50% of the population? So you're talking
30 million.
Wow. Wow. Sorry. Yeah, that's me trying to do maths while also listening to a question.
So,
wow.
Also,
that's awesome.
Just an update from our early discussion. RFU contribution to academies is?
Well, academy credits.
I was going
to
say
cash.
For the cash in.
Cash for the academy.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
That's not strictly speaking what I meant.
250K, 200K?
400K. So okay. double what I said.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not in the millions. It's not. It is huge for rugby. There's no two ways. It is huge for rugby, but it's not millions and millions and millions and millions.
Yeah. That is interesting.
There used to be a thing, right?
When you get EQP credits for. Oh, that's not just for academy.
That's just the right to spend your own money.
The academy product.
Yeah, that's extra to the salary cap, isn't it? So that's not actual cool.
Just on that,
cash.
It's an interesting kind of story. Kind of interesting. It's very loosely interesting. Right?
If you're a rugby nose, you might find it mildly
interesting.
I find
this interesting, yeah. So that academy payment was dependent on you sticking to the academy rules. Mm-hmm. And the academy rules were you need an academy, and it has to be in this geographic location. I can't remember quite which one it was.
You can only select players from this geographic location. You have to meet these criteria of coaching and all the rest of it.
So someone I was talking to who runs a club was like, well, we'll just won't have the money and we'll just take players from everywhere, or we'll just fold the academy. Like, so it's either costing us too much, we're just going to fold it anyway, because it does cost Premiership clubs a lot of money to run these things.
Yeah.
So we'll either fold it, or we won't fold it, we'll keep it, but we won't take the money and we'll just poach from everywhere. So they changed it. So now you've just got to run the academy as part of the Premiership rules. You've just got to do it as a mandatory. So it's not linked to that payment. Yeah. You get the payment anyway, but you've got
to
run the...
You have to. Yeah. If you're in the Premiership, you
have
to.
They force you
to
have that money now.
Yeah.
It's all been thought of before. Every wheeze, if there's a loophole in rugby, someone's thought of it somewhere.
Like the kicking loophole, the non-retreating...
DuPont's law.
Yeah. Oh, did you see who else might be lining up in the Olympics? I only read it because it was in the...
I did, actually.
Is he Falau?
He might be. An Irish player.
Yeah, I know this, and I can't think...
The guy who won Love Island.
No, it's someone who you wouldn't expect.
The one I'm thinking of is someone you would expect.
Oh, yeah, no, you would expect. You're right. It is the winger from Ulster.
Balakoon, yeah.
That's a great show. Balakoon.
He'd kind of a waste, though.
Great player.
More a waste than
Anton DuPont.
No, that's a national prestige thing.
Ulster's season is done. Oh, he's not in the Ireland squad.
Why is he not in the Ireland squad? He just needs a chance.
Because I don't know about that.
He's the last couple of years.
His upsides are amazing.
But it's the last couple of years he's had a load of niggly injuries. He's not been consistently fit. Prior to that, when we had the home and away game against Ulster and lost the home game after beating them away.
Toulouse.
He was the best winger in Europe.
Yeah.
He was the best player in Europe. And he still didn't get a proper shot. of the Ireland squad.
Will Addison's coming back to Sale, I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm a massive fan of that.
He's so injury prone.
I love Will Addison.
He's such a good player.
He's a great player, great bloke. I just don't think... Well, I think once a player's decided to leave and spend the majority of his prime years elsewhere, why do you want him back?
Unless he's...
cheap.
Very cheap.
Unless he's extremely cheap.
Which he might be given his injury run.
Yeah, like maybe.
Close to home, cheap.
He's probably got a house or something over here. He's probably like...
He's got a massive house in Didsbury, I'm pretty sure.
There you go.
And he did have.
Come back, live in my house.
If you can
hang
get
out
him fit,
with my mates.
If you can get him fit, and he's such a handy squad player because he plays 13 wing and 15.
Do you know though, Sale couldn't find a place for Ryan Mills, and now that's a similar situation. Incredibly talented, incredibly
unfit as a injury prone.
Just injury prone, and he was fit. I thought Ryan Mills was going to absolutely revolutionise Sale. If they could get like 2 years out of him, forget Manu. That's a complete waste of time. Ryan Mills on, I don't know, 40k or 60k or whatever the hell
Manu
they paid
on 10 times the money.
Yeah. Ryan Mills would have been the boy. If they could just get him fit, he's such an astonishingly
good
player.
Got Rob Dupree now, don't need him.
So, well, that's true. That is true.
Is he the good one? Rob Dupree?
Robert Dupree. Rob Dupree's a bad one. Robert Dupree's a good one. Or
one way around.
He's the one that gets paid all of the money. And what he chooses to do with all of his money is completely up to him.
None of our business.
If he happens to give it to his to the twin brothers, that's completely Rob's choice.
Good God.
Enough about Sale's marquee player.
I never suggested that. I've never suggested that ever. But I would do it.
It's quite a funny thing to suggest.
It's a totally funny thing to suggest, but isn't actually happening, I'm sure.
But only if there was some transparency to the viewing public on the salary cap, we would know.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah. It would be hilarious, wouldn't it? Rob Dupree, 2.4 million. What?
Dan Dupree, 42k. Jean-Luc Dupree, 42k. What's the lowest amount you can pay a senior player? 42k.
Okay. Nothing to see here then.
It's only like the tax returns of people who have limited companies.
Yeah, true.
Well, you're only £12,000. Is that the exact amount of the tax-free allowance? Yes.
Well, I mean, you know, if you need to sort out a tax bill, pension contributions, Beardmore and Co. Independent financial advisors. So there you go. Yep. We can shout out.
Just don't expect it to be worth what it was when you put it in.
Oh,
JB can't comment.
Ooh.
I didn't mean that's nothing to do with a bit more financial advisors. Having a pension.
My ooh was my pain for you, Tim.
Yeah, it's all right. I buy Fields and Barnes now.
Fields and Barnes, Land Tycoon. Yeah. And on that bombshell.
Considering there was virtually no rugby this weekend, how long have we done now? I can't quite see the timer.
End it now.
Yes, Phil. Yes, JB.
Over an hour and a half.
Over an hour and three quarters.
Oh my God. Right.
Yeah. All right, we're done. Let the boys end.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.